From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Donald Trump strikes a trade deal with China and with House Democrats on Mexican trade. What's the economic and political fallout? Plus, the House Judiciary Committee votes out two articles of impeachment along party lines. What is likely to happen when the whole House votes next week? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal opinion pages, and I am here with my running mates, Kim Strassel. How are you?
Good. How are you, Paul?
I'm excellent. Thank you, except for my hoarse voice. Bill, how are you?
Very good.
Excellent. All right. So let's take a little, before we get to impeachment, I want to talk about these trade deals because, of course, trade policy being one of Donald Trump's signature campaign pledges. He pledged to redo NAFTA. He struck a deal with NAFTA with Mexico and Canada to do so, but we didn't know whether it would get a vote in the House. And so the U.S. trade rep, Bob Lighthizer, negotiated with Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats, and they have agreed after Lighthizer made some significant concessions to put the trade pact up for a vote. And that is likely to happen in the House as early as next week, will not come up in the Senate, Mitch McConnell said, until after the impeachment trial in January. But I guess, Kim, how big a victory is this politically for Donald Trump, and what does it mean economically?
Yeah, I think that's a good distinction to make. People have yet to really entirely go through the deal in terms of the changes that were made by Lighthizer and this question of whether or not it's a good deal or not. But politically, it's a very big deal for Donald Trump because it removes at least one of the biggest threats, I would say, politically to his presidency, which is further knocks on the economy. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had some really great numbers, but we've also seen some very worrying information within them about the lack of business investment. And that is stemming from companies being very uncertain about the trade future. So to the extent that Donald Trump can make any progress on these trade deals and reassure the business community, that should help the economy. And that's going to be the biggest thing going for him next November.
Bill, Bob Lighthizer says that he thinks he got 100 Democratic votes that will support this. Now, the price for that is some real concessions on trade. For example, in negotiating with Pelosi, Lighthizer had to throw over the side the provision that gave 10 years of patent protection to American biologics. So Mexico now only has 5. Canada has 8. And the U.S. has 12 in its law. And so American law won't change. But this is basically an invitation driven by Democrats and the American politicians to say to foreign countries, yeah, you know, steal our patents after 5 years. That's not a good precedent.
No, I think it's amazing. You said there's 100 Democrats Lighthizer thinks he's going to get. He should get all of them because this is more of a Democratic deal than a traditional Republican deal, is it not? I mean, the concerns, the way Donald Trump campaigned on this. So it's a victory for him. I'd say there's an argument to be made that we wouldn't get this deal if it weren't for impeachment because Mrs. Pelosi didn't want to give him the win that Kim described, but she kind of has to. Otherwise, it's just going to be the accusation of impeachment. But more Democrats should support this because the kind of arrangements that were made are more in line with what Democrats want than, say, what I would like.
Couple of examples of that, Kim, other than the one on biologics, there's going to be wage mandate that a certain percent of products on automobiles has to be made by workers who are making at least $16 an hour. That's an increase from what many in Mexico make. There's also content rules of origin, which require that the content of automobiles and trucks have to be made in North America, can't be imported from the likes of Japan or Europe. All of that is managed trade and not genuinely free trade, but it is what Lighthizer thought he had to do to get Democrats on board. My own view would have been that they'd have been better off doing this in the first 2 years when Republicans ran the House, but they just couldn't get that done, or maybe didn't want to get it done for the reasons that Bill says about Donald Trump. But you know, it's still take up the point that Bill made about whether this would have happened without impeachment.
It never would have happened without impeachment.
So you're really that definitive about it.
Absolutely. Here's the only thing driving this is, I mean, look, Nancy Pelosi's strategy from the moment she retook the gavel earlier this year has been to deny Donald Trump any bipartisan victories because she wants to be able, she wanted instead to pass her own agenda, even though it wouldn't be one that would be signed by the president, but say to American people, this is what you'd get if only Democrats were in control. And this is why we need the White House in 2020. And she didn't want the president at all to be say, look, I can work with Congress. So that was always the strategy. And if you look, there hasn't really been anything that people have cooperated on beyond stuff that's basic for the functioning of the government, like, you know, budget deals. So this is only happening because her moderate members went to her and said, if you want us to go along with this impeachment thing, you have got to allow us to go back to our districts and show that we can get something done. And many of these districts are ones that, you know, it's very important, these provisions of farming districts, manufacturing districts, and there was great desire for this trade deal to go into effect. Just one last thing. I mean, I have my issues with this bill, obviously, too. There is great cost. But the one thing I would point is that the alternative was a complete lapse of trade, of a trade system between our biggest trading partners. And that's also a scary situation, too.
Well, some people thought that was a bluff by Trump, that he wouldn't have pulled out of NAFTA because of the damage it would have done had this not moved to a vote. But that's,
I'm not always so sure about that.
I'm not so sure about it. He put a lot of tariffs in that I didn't think he did. I think that was essentially the gist of the Journal editorial, right? A deal as flawed is better than the uncertainty. You know, what traders hate the most is uncertainty. And then God knows what deal you'd get down the road, probably worse.
And just to support both of your points about Pelosi and her political motivations here, I remember in 2007 when the Democrats last came into power in the House, there were three or four trade deals pending, one with Colombia, one with Peru, one with Panama. I think those were the three.
South Korea, I think.
Maybe South Korea too, before. And she just put those in the drawer. She just stuffed them right in the drawer. They didn't get passed until the Republicans retook the House after 2010 and 2011. So she could very well have done that this time, if not for the political motivation that you two have described. Now, let's turn to China. The White House announcing a deal with China called Phase One, which is not solving all problems, but it based. I got a briefing by a senior administration official before I came on the call. It's more extensive than the some of the reporting suggests, in that it does have promises by the Chinese to abide by protect intellectual property. It has something on tech transfer that is not going to be used as they're not going to be able to use it for extortion. You must turn this technology over to us, American company, if you want that license. They're not going to be able to do that. There's a pledge, which they've been making for 20 years, to open up their financial system, but they're really going to do it, they say. There's a bunch of purchases, quite a bit, almost as much as $200 billion over 2 years in multiple American products across many different industries. That, at least that is the promise. It's an enormous thing. We'll see if they can manage that. And in return, the president is not going to impose the new sanctions he threatened on December 15. That's this Sunday. And he is cutting in half the tariffs he imposed in September from 15% to 7.5%. So that's the Xi Jinping part of this. And I think the good thing for the rest of us, for the economy, is Kim's point that she made about Mexico. This is more a relief of tariff anxiety and economic anxiety. And we're in a period of peace or truce for a year at least. As we see what happens with the Chinese pledges.
Yeah, I think there's an arguable case that the lack of trade deals knocked off some of our growth, right?
About a percentage point.
I'm not an economist, but That's a reason.
There's a Fed study to that effect.
And that's a big deal. So, I think it was wise for President Trump to conclude this going in. Of course, and there are a lot of free traders that are really angry with China with the practices. You and I know, when I lived in Hong Kong, people would say the problem with Chinese law is it's so unpredictable. And the problem was the opposite. It's very predictable if you're the foreigner. You would get screwed, right? And the brother-in-law of the guy at the foreign ministry would get. So the real problem with China is not always reaching deals. That's a problem. But getting them to live up to deals, as you mentioned, in other areas. And that's what people were looking for. But again, I think the same logic with the USMCA is it's better to have a deal than to keep the uncertainty going. I mean, the market, it was crazy. The market goes up 400 points when they say we're close to a deal. The market goes down 500 points when it says, trade talks have stalled over this. So, we didn't want a year of that.
All right. We're talking about trade deals and impeachment, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
Join The Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel. And Kim, just to finish up on the trade subject with China, I noticed that Chuck Schumer, the Senate minority leader, has said criticizing the president for what he said was accepting a bad deal, basically giving in to the Chinese. My sense is that it's actually a better deal than Schumer gives it credit for. But it isn't the end of the world. It's not going to solve all of our problems with certainly China. We're going to be competing with China economically and politically for the rest of, I dare say, your lifetime, much less mine. And there is a certain level of cynicism by Chuck Schumer when he says that, because he'd be only too happy to hold the president's coat, saying, "Mr. President, you go at those Chinese, more tariffs, yes, more economic harm." He doesn't care what happens to the economy in the next year. He benefits if the economy weakens.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is not just a little cynical. It's bigly cynical, Paul, to use a Donald Trump phrase. Look, the Democrats are in a very hard place all around when it comes to economic questions, right? Because it's looks pretty good out there, at least in terms of unemployment and wage growth and what the stock market has been doing. And, this is a direct function of the tax reform that the president passed and the deregulation that he's engaged in. So that's a hard place for Democrats to be. And, this is one of those things that nonetheless was hanging out there. Potentially a problem over the administration and that economic growth. So to the extent that Donald Trump is trying to fix that problem and make it better for the economy and then in turn for his own prospects of reelection, no, Chuck Schumer is definitely not going to be a fan of that.
One thing I should add, Bill, that I got briefed on by the administration source was that there is a pretty interesting consultation system now that's going to be set up and an enforcement mechanism. So that hasn't existed. So as you know from our experience with companies in China, that somebody comes in, your joint venture partner steals your patent. You got you're on your own, right? You complain to the Chinese and they say, right. Oh, sorry, we don't see the theft. Now, if there's that kind of a complaint, the company will be able to go to USTR, the U.S. Trade Rep, and then there'll be a consultation process, first at a lower level with 21 days, then at a secondary level for 24 days, it can't be settled. And then it pops up to Leo He, the chief economic advisor for Xi Jinping, and Lighthizer at the USTR. And they have a certain period of time to settle it. And if it's not settled then there's the ability of the U.S. to impose tariffs. So it's an interesting change of process that may do some good.
Right. I'm kind of for the process stuff. I'm more skeptical about the regulations and so forth, but to have a process where you can, I'm still frankly getting over that you and Kim could use the word cynical in association with
Chuck Schumer.
Shock that I could hear something like that. But I think you're right. And I think that that's what you outlined in China is probably the best we can hope for in an opaque system. It's still a communist government, right? What are we going to do? I mean, part of me thinks, the Adam Smith part of me thinks, companies should be free to invest anywhere. But if they get in trouble because you go to a crummy country like that, you should be on your own, you know?
Well, politically, the question is that is sustainable?
Right.
Okay. Thank you both. Let's turn to impeachment. We have the House Judiciary Committee voting along party lines to no one's surprise, to impeach the President of the United States after an extensive and, how should we say, raucous debate on Thursday.
And painful. Can we just add that word?
Yeah, that too. Luckily, I had other things to do, like get out of paper. And so I didn't subject myself to too much of it. But there's no question that, you know, the two sides are, it's ships passing in the night. There's no agreement at all about the basic fundamental facts here, much less with whether they are impeachable offenses. And that's the problem here that the Democrats have. They just haven't persuaded not just Republicans, but the country. And in fact, public opinion has moved mildly away from impeachment in the last three weeks.
Pretty clearly haven't persuaded all the Democrats, right? Because we're hearing about possible Democratic defection. So only two objected to the inquiry, Democrats, right? But there might be more. So clearly that argument failed with some members in their own party. Look, the one thing Mrs. Pelosi and Adam Schiff has done is something that Paul Ryan could never do, Mitch McConnell couldn't do on health care, and even Donald Trump couldn't do. Unite the Republican Party. It's amazing how united they are right now, certainly in the House, and I think even in the Senate. And this was a sense, I think, when this started, I said, the worse it is procedurally, the more dishonest and departing from standard norms, almost the better that was for Donald Trump, if you assume he's going to be impeached at the end, because people can see what a terrible, you know, unfair process it's been.
Well, what do you expect to happen next week, Kim, on the House floor? I guess the key questions are not what the arguments are. We know those arguments. The key questions are two. How many Democrats will break away and oppose impeachment on one or both articles? And second, how many Republicans, if any, will vote for one of the two articles?
Yeah, well, to that point, and Bill's point, it's never good when you come out of an impeachment proceeding and the number one question is how many of your own people are you going to lose? And, you know, that's what the vote counting is going to be about. It's been somewhat remarkable to listen to some of the Democrats that are clearly going to go home this weekend and then do a lot of polling, like flash polling, et cetera, and see which of these scenarios hurts them more, especially these moderates that hail from Trump districts, of which there are 31. But it's been interesting watching them. They've got all kinds of reasons for why they haven't made up their minds yet, and they need to go back and investigate what happened in the Clinton investigation. I mean, it's really something, the position that Nancy Pelosi has put them in. I don't see any Republicans defecting on this, which, by the way, is a real statement, given that you even have some who are retiring and who are not necessarily big fans of Donald Trump.
Quite a number of them.
And yet they have been overwhelmingly outraged and not impressed by the way these proceedings have rolled out and the paucity of the charges. So Republicans will stay together. The question is, you know, just how many Democrats? I don't think there's necessarily a risk at this point that Nancy Pelosi gets so many who defect that she doesn't pass impeachment. But I think you could see a real number, maybe even double digits.
Oh, wow. So even double digits. Now, of course, they're cross-cut, the pressures politically, because if they vote to acquit Donald Trump, or they vote against impeachment, rather, then they could get a primary challenge in some of these districts. On the other hand, if they vote to convict, then as they go to November, the Republicans will make that case against them. So I guess it's a question, if you're just looking at the raw politics, which is the riskiest thing for you to do in that district? And my advice to these people, not that they'll listen to me, would be, if you're going to make a vote on something like impeachment, just do what you believe and then sell it. Just say, here's why I did it. And if he did it, you know, if I voted for to impeach the guy because I really believe he committed an impeachable offense, then go in there, vote for it, and defend it.
Paul, you won't be surprised. I'll take the cynical Chuck Schumer approach to it, the logic. And just say, you remember that in 1776, the musical, when they're voting on independence, and is it the guy from Rhode Island or New York? There's one vote, and he says, if I vote for independence, I'll just be one of many, right? But if I'm the one that stops it, you know, I'll go down in history as the guy that stopped it. So I mean, in general, I think that these people, even if they're in Trump districts, I think you're better off not angering your own party as a general rule, because you need the turnout of your own party to do it. Now, you may excite turnout on the other side if you're in a Trump district, but that's why I think that Mrs. Pelosi is comfortably able to get the vote she needs for impeachment, because I don't believe she would say what she said, which was, I'm not whipping anyone, I'm not pressuring them to vote, which I interpret as meaning I have the votes, right?
Kim, there's a story that I reported years ago when Roger Jepson in the early 1980s was a senator from Iowa, and he was a freshman, and he didn't know how to vote. So he approached one of the senior Republicans on the floor, Bob Dole, and said, how should I vote? And Dole said to him, well, look, here's how to think about it. You can never go wrong voting for something that fails or against something that passes. So keep that advice in mind. So this may happen with the impeachment with a number of them, because they know that impeachment, Nancy Pelosi is going to get a majority for both articles. So, you know, if they want, they might end up voting against it. And
look at my congresswoman who won. And in a Trump district.
But who was that, Bill? Mikey Sherrill.
Mikey Sherrill, former naval aviator, right? But the district only went for
Northern New Jersey.
Only went for Trump by half a percentage point.
Wow. Right?
So the demographics are good. So I would think she'd be better off, even though I would not like her to do this, but I think she would be better off voting for impeachment. Because, it depends how close it is. If you're in a district that 20-plus Trump, you might think differently.
Kim?
Yeah, I'll be curious to see if there ends up being a kind of strength in numbers thing that materializes out of all of this. Right now, I think there are two Democrats who have already said that they will vote no. But you do have these groups of people from these tough districts who they've already made clear they're all talking to each other. so what you could have is a sort of band that decides that there is some strength in numbers in voting no.
Sure.
So it's hard to be one of two people. It's a little bit easier to be one of 12 or 14. You just kind of get put in the pack. So that's why I was saying that I think that there's as good a possibility that you have double digits as there is that you just have two.
Yeah, but boy, what a statement it would be if more than 10 Democrats in the House vote against the impeachment articles. That would be, I think, really striking and undermine the credibility of the whole exercise and make it easier for a couple of things to happen in the Senate, which is for the Senate to dispatch it quite quickly. And make it much harder for a Mitt Romney or somebody else who's not particularly fond of Trump to vote for conviction.
Right?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Kim.
By the way, the House leadership is telling anyone who will listen that they're not doing any arm twisting, and everyone's just being allowed to vote their conscience. But I can tell you, if you believe that, I've got an article of impeachment to tell you.
Yeah, that Speaker Pelosi, has Bill suggested, you have to give her credit. She has remarkable control over her caucus, but she knows that her credibility is on the line here in terms of the number of votes that she gets. It will make her look bad if you get that kind of a magnitude. I would argue even if you get 8 to 10, it begins to look pretty embarrassing about just how strong this impeachment case was, Bill.
Yeah, I agree firmly. That's why I think she's pretty confident in the votes. Because look, at her worst case scenario is that she loses the vote she needs to impeach, right? And then so she's given Trump his trade victory and she hasn't impeached him. You know, the AOCs and the movement on the party is not going to be with that.
So here's an interesting question, just to finish up. At the end of this week, momentous week for news, you've got these two trade deals announced that are going to move forward. You've got impeachment out of the Judiciary Committee. You have a British election in which the Tories win in a rout. So it's interesting to me. What does this tell you about, I mean, is this a week where Donald Trump has actually been helped in terms of his reelection?
I think that's absolutely the case. I do, with the trade deals and with impeachment. I mean, look, I'm still not convinced that impeachment necessarily redounds to the benefit of either party, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I you look at the numbers and it seems as though the kind of hatred that has motivated this is baked into the Democratic base. It is likely rejected and reviled by the Republican base. We've all seen this coming for a while. It's why you haven't seen the polls move. And I'm just not sure how that dynamic would change at all by November of next year. But what I do think you see happening is Donald Trump moving to do some important things on the economy, getting through impeachment without major damage, again, because the measure of this was, did Democrats convince anybody on the Republican side? They haven't done that. You know, and so in that regard, he has a humming economy and he's got his base on his side. He comes out of this with as good a shot as he's going to have.
And also, it was interesting to me, though he did tweet about the fake impeachment and so forth, it was more modest than some of his earlier efforts, and he managed to resist the temptation to help Boris Johnson by, and I think that's actually a big thing because it's different from what he's done before, and he clearly wanted Johnson to win and so forth.
Do you think he was tied down by somebody in the White House to get him to tweet on that?
I don't know, but it was probably, a smart decision not to give people an excuse to vote against Boris Johnson.
Yeah, because Jeremy Corbyn and the Labor Party did try to link Johnson to Trump and say, look, they're going to do a trade deal
which
sells out the National Health Service. Right. And Trump, I think, did say, I got no interest in the National Health Service.
I'd like to see that trade deal myself. But
I think Johnson and Trump are going to do a deal in the next year. I really do.
And it could reshape Europe. And frankly, the Trump administration, because we don't have many disputes with Britain. So, I mean, the potential of Britain is to say, let's have a clean deal. And then Trump, because Trump doesn't like multilateral deals, he can go and say, anyone else who wants this deal, you can have it.
Right. And the big deal will be pharma and biotech and drug patents. Okay. One of the big deals, negotiating terms. All right. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week to follow the actual House vote on impeachment. Thank you for listening.